So I want to set the scene for my next discussion because we're going to dig into a report that blows the lid of a story that we've been told about the post-October the 7th protests in the United Kingdom. NGO Monitor says that these marches weren't actually spontaneous at all, but really coordinated, funded, and linked to actors that most Britons would never expect. At the center of it all is a surge in hate directed at British Jews. So joining me, and I'm really pleased that she is Anne Hertzberg, legal advisor at NGO Monitor, to walk us through what is really, really going on. Anne, once again, thank you so much for chatting to me on Chai FM.
Great to be with you.
So, Anne, your report challenges the idea that the post-October the 7th protests were actually grassroots. When you look at the coordination and the structure that you've mapped, what jumps out at you?
Yes, so we took a look at 40 protests that have taken place in the UK since October 7th. And what we found was quite interesting, that there were actually only 6 organizations that were behind most of these protests. There were an additional 35 or so organizations that appeared at most of them also, that were involved in the protests here and there. And out of these groups, at least 10 had ties to terrorist organizations or the Muslim Brotherhood. Almost all of them got funding from foreign sources. A lot of money was coming in from radical funding networks in the United States, which was a quite surprising finding. And there were even some groups that had sanctioned individuals that were working for them. So it was quite a interesting picture of who these groups were and how they've been stoking division within the United Kingdom.
Can we talk about those 10 that you referred to, the ones with the links to the extremists? According to the flyer on your website, it claims from the IRGC to Hamas to the PFLP. I mean, there's quite a pedigree there. I guess my question is, how solid are these connections and what does a link actually mean in practice?
Yeah, so it ranged. So it could range from many of the people, leaders of these groups, actually met with or attended events with members of Hezbollah or Hamas. So that's one thing. A few of the groups were actually thought to be associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. That was another. And then all the way to, there were a couple organizations where they actually had individuals that were sanctioned for being linked to Hamas, so who were actual Hamas members. So there was a range of what we saw, but it was highly disturbing because, you know, these protests are supposed to be about quote unquote human rights. And yet they're being organized by, you know, the same forces that really were involved in October 7th, when you look at it. They were serving really as what we were calling a vector of transmission. So you have, you know, radical actors like the IRGC, Hamas, Muslim Brotherhood on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you have the public. And these demonstrations and these organizations were really promoting the narratives and the political agenda into and mainstreaming it into the general public, which has then led to a lot of the polarization and destabilization that was ongoing within UK society the past few years.
It's astounding the extent to which they've been as successful as they have been. I mean, this so clearly was coordinated because they were ready. They were just ready. Those protests started
exactly
on the 8th. On the 8th, I think even.
Well, not only that, I mean, in our report, there was one organization we found actually applied at around noon on October 7th for a permit for a demonstration that evening. Oh, yeah. So these people were ready to go with their signs and their permits and these demonstrations on October 7th. They did not even hesitate.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about a character like Jeremy Corbyn. We thought we'd seen the back of him when he was voted out of the Labour Party or moved out of the Labour Party, whatever happened. But it seems like he's been incredibly active behind the scenes in pulling together all these disparate organisations with a single aim of, fomenting real hatred against Israel and anything Israel-related. What do you have to say about the leadership overlap? Because I see he appears across multiple protesting bodies. I don't know who they all are. I took it off your website, but it's CND, Stop the War, PSC, People's Forum UK. I mean, this man is active.
Yeah, that actually was also something very surprising for us. So out of these six core organizations and a few of the others that were also very involved in the protests, there was a lot of leadership overlap. So again, you know, we're hearing that this is like some grassroots movement of the people, when in fact, you know, these were professional organizations. Some of them have been around since the early 2000s. And Jeremy Corbyn, for instance, had leadership roles in at least three of these six organizations. So that was quite fascinating. And again, it just shows the extent to which they're all acting together. And when you really look at the protest infrastructure, it's actually quite a small group of people and organizations that are doing everything.
And just in terms of the sophistication, once again, and pardon me if I'm incorrect, but this just came off your website, so forgive me if I'm wrong, but the youth mobilization angle, also striking. Amnesty, training hundreds of young activists. Friends of Al-Aqsa, pushing youth engagement. So on the one hand, you could claim, well, it's simply political education, but on the other hand, you could say this is way more of a deliberate strategy to target youth. Is that in fact what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that these organizations are targeting the youth, because what better way to keep your movement going, to bring in new people to it, is to target essentially, you know, teens and young adults. They're very impressionable. These kids, you know, are fairly ignorant. And then, you know, an organization like Amnesty International gets their hands on them and really trains them to become the activists of the future. So it's really a pipeline to keep their movements going. And these are, you know, vulnerable and impressionable kids. And so, you know, in some ways, I think they're being taken advantage of by these organizations.
And then finance. I mean, that's another key issue, because without finance, nothing happens. You track millions of pounds flowing through these networks, be it through memberships or donations or foreign foundations or even cryptocurrency. And I guess we've got to ask ourselves how much of this is normal activism and how much raises or should raise serious concern.
Well, again, this was, I think, one of the central findings we had was that when you look at these groups, many of them are not registered. So some are registered as charities, but the majority were actually either registered as companies or not registered as anything. And given the amount of people that they're able to mobilize, hundreds of thousands of people on a weekly basis, and the amount of money they're raising, millions of dollars, the fact that there's no way, no transparency, no way to really trace the funding. If they're a registered charity, you at least have some ability to see, you know, how much money are they bringing in some cases, who's giving the money. But in almost every case, it was very difficult to find who is actually funding these organizations. And given the connections to extremist actors, the other fear we have is that a lot of the money coming in is perhaps from state, you know, state entities or other extremist groups, and there's no way to know who exactly is paying for all of this, because these things are not cheap. And so that again is, you know, something we were calling on the British government that they need to investigate. They can't keep letting their streets be taken hijack by these people, or harassing minority communities, and who are the actors behind this?
And then there's the issue of crypto, which by its very nature is secret. It kind of feels
that actually
it feels new.
I was just going to say, Yeah, so that also was highly disturbing. And there were two cases where we found the groups were raising money via crypto. One of them, Palestine Action, was recently prescribed as a terrorist organization in the UK. And crypto, as we know, is a way in which criminal networks raise money in many cases. So that raised a lot of alarm bells. That they were then, after the prescription, were then, seeking to raise money via crypto. And then the other group that was doing so is one that is known to be campaigners for jihadis, for people who have been involved in terrorism, the Taliban, ISIS, and other actors, horrible actors. And so that also raises a lot of questions. What who are providing these groups with their financing?
This issue of the problem of charities and companies and unregistered groups all working together to avoid disclosure rules. If you were to advise government, what recommendations would you be making?
Well, I think first of all, the government really needs, so a lot of the rules that I think would help the transparency and help provide more light, shed more light on what's been going on are already on the books in the UK, but the problem is the lack of enforcement. So in the UK, they have something called the Charity Commission, and they simply do not have enough people to really, investigate or conduct oversight over what these charities are doing, how they're abusing their charitable status. In other cases, again, they're either registering as companies or nothing. And that's something that perhaps, governments need to say, if you are going to be raising money from the public under ostensible charitable purposes, you have to register. You cannot do this without registering. So that's one thing. And another thing we're calling for is oversight. We're calling for investigations. So the UK government, because this is not something that private groups like ours can really do, that we don't have the access to that information, and only governments really do. And so this is something that really and is going on in the United States, for instance. And we call on countries like the UK to really start taking a look at who are the people influencing their politics.
And we're out of time. We're going to leave it there. It just kind of strikes me that what with Andy Burnham, the new leader of Labour, or the new Prime Minister, looks like the Jewish community is in for a very rocky ride.
Yeah, I don't, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to get better, at least for a few more years. Yeah, exactly. I think we're in for
Rocky
more
ride.
difficult times.
And as always, thank you so much for chatting to me.